It is a privilege to be with you this morning. It's a particular privilege to be preaching on Palm Sunday, and an even more special privilege to be preaching on the crucifixion. You are a good man with a good heart, and it is hard for a good man to be a king. These are words we could imagine in the mouth of Pilate at the beginning of John chapter 19. In fact, it's actually a line from the newest Marvel superhero film, Black Panther, which if you haven't seen yet, I encourage you to rush out and see because it's great. It is. It's actually wonderful. But the sentiment of this quote is similar to many of the things Pilate says to Jesus as he questions him. Pilate points out several times that he can find no basis for a charge against Jesus. Jesus is a good man. But every time Jesus is associated with being king of the Jews, the cries of crucify ring louder and louder. It's a quote that is true because of people, because of human beings, because of what we want and even expect of our leaders, our kings, our queens, something akin to immortality rather than goodness. And when we see goodness, we too often cynically dismiss it as politically motivated. Our opinions of leaders are just as fickle as the people in Jerusalem. In the space of 1 week, Jesus goes from being the king of the triumphal entry to the king of mockery on the cross. So we read in John chapter 12, "The next day the great crowd that had come for the festival heard that Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem. They took palm branches and went out to meet him, shouting, 'Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel.' But Jesus found a young donkey and sat on it. As it is written, 'Do not be afraid, daughter Zion. See, your king is coming, seated on a donkey's colt.'" But then in a space of less than a week, we have John chapter 19. Where we read, "Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, 'Hail, King of the Jews.' And they slapped him in the face." Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jewish leaders kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down at the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement. It was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about noon. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him." "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priests answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. It is hard for a good man to be king. Or rather, it is hard for us to accept a good man as king. But the true king, Jesus, shows us how to live by the way he dies. There are four different things that I want us to look at this morning, what Jesus does on the cross. I hope that by looking at those four things, we see a little bit the way Jesus shows us how to live by how he dies. First of all, Jesus carries his cross. A little bit later in John chapter 19, what Pauline just read for us, we read, "Finally Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus. And carrying his own cross, he went out to the place of the skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. There they crucified him, and with him two others, one on each side, and Jesus in the middle." He carries his cross. Now, the importance of Jesus carrying his cross is not like what I say to my kids when we've gone on a trip somewhere. They have carried one thing or another with them, perhaps too many toys, and then at some point, inevitably, there is that, "Daddy, will you carry this for me?" No, you've brought what you've brought, carry it yourself. That's not what Jesus is doing here. The importance of Jesus carrying his cross is not about him taking responsibility for himself or bearing his own weight, carrying his own weight. No, Jesus bears his own cross out of the same submission to God's will as when he bears the whip, the crown of thorns, the scorn and insults that he receives from every group along the way. The crowds, the chief priests, the Roman soldiers, even one of the criminals on the cross next to him. He bears all these things because he knows it was for this purpose that he has come. For this purpose he was sent by the Father. And he has chosen already, thinking back to the Garden of Gethsemane, to pray, "Father, not my will but yours be done." Luke 9:23, Jesus says to his disciples, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it." See, Jesus' act of carrying his own cross is both a literal and figurative fulfillment of his own command to his disciples. He shows us by his own example. But Jesus doesn't just carry his own cross. He also cares for his mother. John chapter 19, a little bit later, verses 25 to 27 says, "Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, and his mother's sister, and Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, 'Woman, here is your son.' And to his disciple, 'Here is your mother.' From that time on, this disciple took her into his home." This word that Jesus speaks from the cross is only recorded for us here in John's Gospel. And again, like Jesus' act of carrying his cross, Jesus' care for his mother is about something deeper than the simple but poignant act of providing for Mary. Remember, Jesus is the one who has a pretty loose hold on biological family relationships. Matthew chapter 12, Jesus is talking to the crowd and his mother and brothers stood outside waiting to speak with him. And someone told him, "Your mother and brothers are standing outside, wanting to speak to you." And he replied to them, "Who is my mother? Who are my brothers?" And then pointing to his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." Jesus has a pretty loose hold on biological family relationships. And I think in speaking this word of care for his mother, Jesus is demonstrating once again the radical unselfishness that he has been teaching his disciples all through his ministry. Even in these, his final moments, he's not focused on himself, but focused on others and their needs. See, I have a hard enough time focusing on other people when I'm not doing anything at all. I most often, when I'm not doing anything, find myself focused on my smartphone, which is probably why the kids see these examples and now want smartphones. Focused on my smartphone rather than focused on any of the other people I am with. I often find myself neglecting my kids or my wife as we're sitting there at home and thinking, well, I'm not even interacting with these people anymore. I'm just focused on my phone, which is really just being focused on myself. But not so with Jesus. Jesus is the one who so many times the Gospels tell us he looks on the crowd or looks on a certain woman or a certain man and he has compassion on them. I think exactly the same thing is happening here. Even while he hangs on a cross, even while he struggles, fights for every single breath, he turns his compassionate gaze on his mother and provides for her. It's not just carrying his cross and caring for his mother. Jesus also continues to the end. It is finished, he says from the cross. It's a completion of his work on earth. In John chapter 4, verse 34, Jesus says, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work." And then later on, when Jesus is praying for himself, his disciples, and the world, he says, "I have brought you, Father, glory on earth by finishing the work you gave me to do." Jesus continues to the end. He not only submitted to God's will and purposes for his life once, but he did it over and over again, persevering in the face of adversity, even to the end when he cries, "It is finished." And this is not merely a word of perseverance, though it certainly signals that. It's also a word of completion and perfection. His is a finished life of perfection. The finished work of faithfulness God asked of Abraham centuries ago, which up to this point in history has been a work of failure and faithlessness by every single person. But Jesus is the finished and perfect sacrifice of atonement and redemption. All the work of the forgiveness of sins is completed in this one act. It's accomplished in him. And he demonstrates for us the perseverance required to move beyond the praises of Palm Sunday, to endure the trials of Good Friday. See, we cannot think ourselves great people of perseverance when we're being encouraged and praised, and receiving love and affection. We can't think to ourselves, "Oh, this path is easy. I'll happily carry on this road," when it's paved with palm branches and lined with adoring fans. Now, perseverance comes when we feel broken and used up, when there seems to be no one to encourage or support us, when the only thing we're confident in is God's purpose for our lives, or maybe even in the moment we're not even confident of that. Jesus shows us what it is to be blessed when others persecute you, when others falsely say all kinds of evil against you. He carries his own cross, he cares for his mother, he continues to the end, and then he chooses to die. He is a willing sacrifice. Unlike any sacrifice up to this point of lamb or bull or fruit or grain, Jesus willingly gives up his life for the sake of all humanity. Yes, he was exhausted and broken. Yes, he was near his end. Certainly the abuse he had received hastened his final breath. But he fulfills every part of his mission. And when his work is complete, he bows his head and gives up his spirit. There is no need for him to cling to a moment that is already fulfilled, already whole. It is finished. And it is his choice to die. But Jesus is also the fullest embodiment and example of the one who loses their life will find it. Even this week, as we contemplate and remember the cross, we also look forward to Easter Sunday. Jesus gives up his life willingly, but on the third day he will rise again to new life, never to die again. See, Jesus, as the true King, shows us how to live by the way he dies. He submits himself to God's will. He demonstrates great unselfishness and true perseverance and a willingness to make the ultimate sacrifice. He shows us how to live by the way he dies. But we have to stay in that truth for just a moment. The idea of living by his death. Because it is precisely because Jesus dies that we live. Without Jesus' death and resurrection, we would be stuck living a life that only leads to death. But now we have the opportunity to live a life that leads to life. To live a life of purpose and fulfillment in the will of God. To live a life of perseverance dedicated to the good of others and not just ourselves. To live a life of sacrifice with the hope and confidence that our treasure is in heaven. And paradoxically, the way to eternal life requires us to choose to die to ourselves. As Paul puts it in Galatians, "I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live. But Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." This is the paradox of the Christian faith. By dying to ourselves and our own way of doing things, by placing our faith and hope in Jesus, submitting our will to God's will, we find life in all its fullness. But it requires this radical sacrifice of self, which Jesus so beautifully and profoundly exemplifies. Jesus asks us to give our all, and that's what we are willingly meant to give to him.